It's Monday, November 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Voters in Turkey have cast ballots. We have results. Reaction to a direct U.S. military presence in Syria.
I don't know if it's a win and lose situation. We're trying to keep up.
We check with a leading researcher on the fight against Ebola. Also ahead, ancient grains being used for today's meals. And the celebrity consequences of relationship rumors. It's all on today's International Edition. Early results show the party of Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is set to regain control of the parliament in snap elections held Sunday amid an atmosphere of tension. With more than 80% of the vote counted, Erdogan's party has more than 50% of the vote. Voter turnout was very high, up at 87%, and it was an unusually divisive campaign, preceded by violence that included the twin bombings that killed more than 100 people in Ankara last month, Turkey's worst terrorist attack. Some voters, especially Turkey's Kurds, saw this poll as a chance to stem what they see as Erdogan's increasingly authoritarian rule. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez has more from Istanbul.
A steady stream of voters, young and old, came throughout the day to this polling center in Istanbul's heavily Kurdish Dalapdere neighborhood. It's the second time they've had to vote in a national election this year. But some saw it as a chance to end the divisions and bring peace.
In Turkey, they make people go against one another, causing brothers to kill each other. We definitely don't accept this condition and are opposed to it.
Balloting went, for the most part, smoothly in Istanbul and in Turkey's eastern Kurdish regions, where the government has been fighting a Kurdish insurgency for decades. But underneath the calm, there was tension. An altercation broke out inside the polling station between a poll worker and a journalist. A politician with a pro-Kurdish party said people on Monday would awake either in a democracy or a dictatorship. In another part of the city, President Erdogan, accused by opponents of amassing power, cast his ballot and called on all to respect the national will. Many voters said they're not happy to come back to the polls, but in Erdogan's old neighborhood, a stronghold of his party, it was a sense of duty that brought them back for a second round.
Our government thought it appropriate, so we came here and voted. I say, let's hope for the best for our nation and people.
After the polls closed, the nervous wait began for the final results and for the verdict on Turkey's future. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Istanbul.
Well, it's time for us to go and see what's trending out online. Our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, joins me in Studio 22 to do just that. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. Hope you had a nice start to this month.
Yes, thank you.
November 1st is the World Vegan Day, and that hashtag is still trending here in America.
Well, gee, before you get into the details, tell us about the terminology first. So what is the difference between being vegetarian and a vegan?
Sure. So there are different levels of being on a plant-based diet, but to put it simply, vegetarians still eat some animal byproducts that includes eggs, dairy, and honey. Now, vegans don't consume anything deriving from animals, including the ones that I just mentioned. But they also don't use leather, fur, silk, wool, and even cosmetics and soaps made with animal products. You'd be surprised, Jim, a lot of conventional personal care products do contain animal products.
So what is the best account to follow to learn more about this day?
Well, I wouldn't say this is the best account to follow, but there is an account dedicated to this special day. You guessed it, it's at World Vegan Day. It was created back in 2009 and shares events happening around the world to celebrate the World Vegan Day. But its last tweet was back in 2010, so I'd say using hashtag World Vegan Day to search for events related to the day is a better route.
Okay, hungry for a new hashtag there. More timely, I'm sure. What are some of the more interesting tweets related to the day?
Well, interestingly enough, an infographic from the IDF is getting a lot of attention on Twitter, and I do mean the Israeli Defense Force. So here's why it's trending. The IDF at IDF spokesperson on Twitter shared an infographic that shows how the military is catering to people who follow plant-based diet. And the infographic shows that vegan soldiers can receive additional money to buy breakfast and dinner, and they always have a vegan option for lunch. And they can also receive separate boots and beret that cater to their lifestyle. So I have to admit, this is pretty, you know, personable, and, you know, they go above and beyond to honor their lifestyle choices. But of course, not all results from hashtag World Vegan Day search showed supportive messages. So some Twitter users actually use the hashtag to show pictures of their steak dinner and bacon breakfast. So, you know, there is still a lot of resistance toward a plant-based diet. Jim?
All right. Well, thanks. That's definitely food for thought, G. She tweets from our program's account at VOA underscore IE. You can also follow her on her own Twitter account at G Abby Lee. I'm out there somewhere at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Washington is digesting news the United States will, for the first time, deploy special forces in Syria to support local fighters battling Islamic State militants. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has been monitoring the reactions on the presidential campaign trail, and he joins us in the studio with more.
Jim, the White House came out with some big news on Friday that caught a lot of people by surprise, that the United States is going to be sending about 50 commandos on the ground in Syria, not to actually battle Islamic State, but to help train and boost the fighting capabilities of the moderate Syrian rebels who are fighting the Islamic State. This from an administration that takes great pride in having withdrawn American forces from various combat zones. Nobody saw this coming. It quickly became fodder out on the campaign trail among those who are vying to replace President Obama in 2017. It was interesting in that neither on the Democratic side nor on the Republican side were there wild cheers of enthusiasm. It definitely was not extreme reaction either way that one might expect.
We have about a dozen Republican candidates, really three on the Democratic side, and you have almost maybe as many different opinions on the subject in reality as you do candidates. Interesting that at this point, nobody's really making, you know, a lot of waves about it.
Indeed. I mean, let's be clear, 50 commandos is a very small number.
Yes.
Here. I think at the height of the war in Afghanistan, we had well over 100,000, ditto in Iraq, taking part in direct combat. This is a very small deployment. Hillary Clinton said that the idea has merit. Which is about as faint a praise as you could possibly give.
Right.
but very quickly said that there should be no massive ground forces in the area taking part in combat operations. Bernie Sanders hopes that this isn't the beginning of some mission creep where we eventually do have combat forces on the ground taking part in combat missions. And he said that we should be avoiding another quagmire. Republicans for years have been saying that we should have intervened in Syria sooner, not by directly taking on President Assad or by directly taking on Islamic State, but by establishing a no-fly zone, more aggressively arming those and backing those who are doing the fighting. And they say that the situation has gotten out of hand because essentially the United States stepped back and let all sorts of things happen in Syria. Nevertheless, I just think that if for nothing else, the symbolism of a president who was elected specifically on the promise that he would keep America out of costly conflicts that sort of go on without end, to see him come around on something like this, even in a symbolic way, I think made a lot of people sort of cock their heads and say, wow.
And perhaps in reference to the costly basis, 50 really is not a large number, like you say. It's a small group of highly trained people going in. But symbolism is a big deal, definitely during the campaign season for president.
It is. And we have to keep in mind that this comes at a time when Russia is taking a more assertive role in Syria, doing a lot of bombing. Presumably, these commandos will be out of the way of Russian bombs falling in Syria. What happens if the very people that these American special forces are training come under direct attack, direct assault? Do these commandos offer no help whatsoever? What orders are they under? I suspect that we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
It is a very intriguing question. I guess this will unfold over time. And Michael, we'll have you back and you can tell us more.
Thanks so much, Jim.
The World Health Organization reports 3 new confirmed cases of the disease Ebola in Guinea in the week ending October 18th. The WHO says since the beginning of the current Ebola outbreak there, that there have been a total of 28,476 reported cases in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, with more than 11,000 reported deaths. Dr. John Dye is the chief of the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases Viral Immunology Branch. He's been involved in the development of filovirus vaccines and therapeutics and spoke with VOA's Susan Yaki.
First of all, can you give us an update on the war against Ebola? Are you winning?
I don't know if it's a win and lose situation. We're trying to keep up. With this current outbreak in Western Africa, in 2 of the countries, they haven't had a reported case in at least a month, so that's a great sign. There are still cases in Guinea, and we're still battling. Let's just put it that way.
Well, how are you approaching your research? What are you looking into?
For the last several decades, and myself for the last decade, we've been looking at developing vaccines and treatments for Ebola virus and other pathogens of interest that could potentially cause pandemics. So in the past 10 years, we've developed multiple vaccines that we have taken through small animal models and moved them into monkeys, seen protection, and now some of those vaccines that we've been developing at USAMRIID and testing are actually being assessed in Western Africa. So there are multiple vaccines that are currently in West Africa being implemented by Merck and Janssen to see if there is any efficacy. On top of that, we've also been trying to develop therapeutics, monoclonal antibodies, and drugs to actually combat the virus, which are currently being investigated as well. So there's a lot going on right now with the therapeutic and vaccine front with Ebola.
So for the layman, does that mean we're pretty close maybe to finding something to help here?
I think we are close. I think we have things in our cabinet that could be effective. The thing about this outbreak is, as you just mentioned, the number of people that were infected and the number of people that succumbed to the disease. Ebola has been around it's been around long before 1976, but we first learned about it in 1976. And prior to this outbreak of Ebola, there's only been about 20 outbreaks that have occurred. And we're talking about a total of 3,000 to 5,000 people that have been infected. So we haven't had a lot of people to look at to see if vaccines or treatments actually would be efficacious. So a silver lining, if you want to look at it that way, from this outbreak is we have a lot of people to look at. We have a large number of people that were infected and survived. So we actually have a way of trying to assess whether these vaccines or therapeutics work.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor, for taking your time to speak with us today. I appreciate it, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Dr. John Dye is featured in the National Geographic show Breakthrough, which premiered on Sunday, November the 1st, and will be running for several weeks.
VOA's Susan Yockey speaking with Dr. John Dai. He is the chief of the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases Viral Immunology Branch. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Lots of cultures around the world have a staple grain that's little known or little grown outside of its home region. A lot of these grains are now showing up on North American grocery shelves and are gaining some popularity. Correspondent Tom Bonsi tracked down some early adopters who invited this wave.
Wayne Carlson became a convert to Ethiopia staple grain while doing public health work in Africa in the mid-1970s. The tiny grain is called teff. It has a mild, nutty, or earthy taste.
I came to know teff because I was eating it all the time and hosted by teff farmers.
Teff flour is the key ingredient for the signature spongy flatbread found in Ethiopian restaurants. In the late 70s, Carlson returned to the U.S. and settled in southwest Idaho. Then he hatched the idea to introduce teff grass to North America.
Geologically, it's very similar to Ethiopia. Ethiopia is very much like the Snake River Plain.
A marketing flyer for the teff company says, "Move over, quinoa, there's a new grain in town." The new grain is actually an ancient one, but Wayne Carlson is not fond of the term ancient grains to describe the category.
Teff was never really a relic. It was never bypassed by history, and then someone went back and said, "Well, this was good. Why don't we still have it?" Teff has always been the mainstay crop for millions and millions of people, and it's just that they were geographically isolated in Northeast Africa. Mm-hmm. So all we've done is said to the rest of the world, "Hey, look, there's this really good stuff there. Why don't you incorporate it into your diet?"
And the rest of the world is doing just that. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Nampa, Idaho.
A new book about hip-hop mogul Jay-Z and his wife Beyoncé, titled Becoming Beyoncé, The Untold Story, has been fueling the rumor mill with details of an alleged romance between Jay-Z and singer Rihanna. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about how this rumor got started and some of its consequences.
So this gentleman by the name of Jonathan Hay was hired by the producer of Rihanna's first single, Pawn the Replay, to do some work, some promotion work, essentially. And so after this book was released, and inside the book, there was some speculation, or it implied that this rumor was made up by a publicist. This gentleman comes forward and says, "Well, actually, yeah, that's true. I made it up hoping that it would generate some publicity for the song. I just kind of threw it out there to see whether or not it would stick. And by golly, it stuck. So much so that Beyoncé and Jay-Z, and we did not know this at the time, but separated for a year back in 2005, as a result of this allegation.
Now, we should say that Rihanna's representatives, her legal team, and Veda Nobles, who wrote the Pawn the Replay, mm-hmm. said, "I didn't hire this guy. He wasn't a publicist. He presented himself to me as something," but they're saying, Rihanna's people are saying, this guy was not officially representing her at all.
No, apparently the producer and the publicist had a couple of conversations, and sometimes this happens in the music industry. You meet someone at a party, they say, "Hey, I can help you." You say, "Okay, sure, let me know what you can do." And then they go do things to sort of prove that they have the juice, if you will, to make things happen. And so it sounds to me like that's what this is. And what makes the story even more interesting is that this guy now has an artist and he's promoting a couple of his own songs, which he's hoping to have released on Jay-Z's Tidal platform. So this is going to be really complicated for him if Jay-Z and or Beyonce decide to comment on this or decide to do something about it, which they have not.
Okay, now, still speaking of Jay-Z and Rihanna, Rihanna is reported to have inked a $25 million deal with Samsung, and Jay-Z's involved in that, too, is he not?
Right. Now, we may remember that Jay-Z had a huge deal with Samsung to release his Holy Grail album, Magna Carta Holy Grail album, via their platform. Well, it sounds like, and we don't have all of the details now, but it sounds like Rihanna is going to do something very similar because Samsung has a new platform that's, I guess, kind of trying to compete with Apple Music, and it's called Milk Music, actually, and it's a radio service. So what I think may be happening here is Rihanna may have agreed to allow Samsung to release this new album that we've been waiting for forever and ever, called Anti. And it would be a great thing for Samsung because, again, it's a highly anticipated album. And she wants to do something interesting for the release. So this would be it, I think.
All right. If you have any comments, you can send a tweet to Shauna at VOA Lady DJ. You can also log on to our website, voanews.com.
Been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website. That would be voanews.com on the thing they call the internet. We're also on Twitter. Our handle is at @VOA_IE. We hope you follow us. And we always thank you for joining us, as well as we thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late September, the Chilean Navy research vessel, Cabo de Hornos, departed from Valparaiso, Chile, loaded with two experimental, fourth-generation, deep ocean assessment and reporting of tsunamis buoy sensors, also known as DART 4G. The United States Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, in partnership with its Chilean counterpart, SHOA, deployed and will test the DART 4G sensors within the seismically active Chilean subduction zone. Although NOAA has 39 buoys currently deployed throughout the world, the new sensors will provide additional coverage in a region of the Pacific at risk for tsunami generation, as demonstrated by the 8.4 earthquake that generated a 5-meter tsunami in some locations of the Chilean coast on September 16th. Improved tsunami detection is a mutual interest for both the United States and Chile. The newest generation DART 4G sensors can separate the seismic noise from the tsunami wave signal, potentially allowing forecasters to measure the tsunami wave as the Earth is still shaking, and greatly improve warning time. As NOAA's tsunami program director, Michael Angrove, described, even an additional 20 minutes warning is an eternity in terms of near-field tsunami forecasts, where waves can begin inundating coastlines within 15 to 20 minutes or less following a seismic event. The NOAA-SHOA research partnership is the result of a memorandum of understanding signed by both organizations in June of 2015. Over the next 5 years, the DART 4G sensor sites will provide coverage for improved forecasts throughout the Pacific while allowing further testing of the DART 4G technology. The United States is proud to partner with Chile to make all countries in the region safer from the sudden and deadly threat of tsunamis.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.